Agenda item number six, discussion and possible action on freshwater mussel federal permitting by Tiffany Morgan, Environmental and Compliance Manager.
As you know, we've been talking over the last couple of years about the potential threat out there of some candidate-listed freshwater mussels in our basin that have potential on a level we've not experienced with endangered species to interfere or cause disruption to our water supply operations. As we've gone through this, we've learned more from U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and we really feel like we have a good feel on their direction and that things are coming to a head. And if I remember, these are the three species, the top two, the Texas fawnsfoot and fall spike. We should have a final decision for listing, or we are anticipating it will be published by the end of this year. I fully expect that the recommendation will be to recommend endangered protections for these mussels. The smooth pimpleback is on a little slower track, but we do anticipate its listing decision to come up within the next year or two also. That one I think there's a little more hope for. Studies have revealed they're a little more prevalent and more of a generalist than we originally anticipated. This is a map of where all these mussels are in our basin, and as you can see, we have populations all the way up to Possum Kingdom, all in the Little River system, Navasota, and a huge cluster down south. So this really, they are ever present and do have a potential throughout our system to have an impact on us. In May, U.S. Fish and Wildlife put out a draft species status assessment, which is the document they use to base their listing decisions on, and this was for the fawnsfoot and fall spike. And threats listed in there, as you can see, again, it hits almost all BRA's lines of business. It's got wastewater discharges, reservoirs, groundwater pumping, drought are all impactors. So what we're going to propose today is that we go forward with Fish and Wildlife and try to generate a positive partnership and go through a pre-listing federal permitting process. Why did we want to do that? Because the ESA has the ability to prohibit any activities that affect the listed species or their habitats. And with that, throughout our basin, that has a great potential to have an impact on the way we conduct our operations. The permits will help provide us some regulatory certainty, should minimize impacts to us if we have an unforeseen situation like a drought worse than a drought or record in one of our stretches that impacts mussel habitat, and move us forward. So what we're looking at is what they call candidate conservation agreement with assurances, which once we enter into that, we agree to do several conservation actions to benefit the species in exchange for regulatory certainty moving forward. They cannot come back and demand more things after the listing from you if you enter into this pre-listing agreement. So we're really trying to get us some regulatory certainty moving forward, where we know what we need to do, wrap things up. Hopefully, Allen's Creek, we can go ahead and have this issue for Allen's Creek reasonably settled and handled, so we know with certainty when we get to the design and study implementation stage what we need to do there, but also give us some security and no surprises for the rest of our operations and water supply. It would be
it's an individual permit that BRA would have for a section of the river or for just one project?
It would be a pre-listing permit that covers us. That'll be one of the things we negotiate is the area coverage, but I would anticipate hitting everything below our reservoirs. So below PK, Proctor, the Little River systems, below Limestone, that covers us. Let me go back from the map.
That's why I'm asking if it's individual.
No, it should not be per, this will cover our operations. It should be a blanket permit for the BRA.
Okay.
Now we may have to at some point in time, with some projects that come up in the future aren't anticipated, we may have to go back and do a little work, but then we should be able to roll it into this existing permit. David expressed early on that he would really like to, because this is an issue, and I concurred wholeheartedly, this is an issue of endangered species that we've never dealt with before. Most of our interactions with Fish and Wildlife have revolved around birds and very isolated projects that were very simple to address and respond. So he asked that we seek the assistance of an organization with a professional experience in permitting. We issued an RFP that garnered four responses, all from qualified fields, and a selection team that was composed of Upper Basin, Central Lower Basin, Water Services, Environmental Services staff evaluated those proposals. When I brought them together, a firm and a team led by BioWest was recommended unanimously as the firm to go with by that selection team. And the contract we're hoping to, and I'm seeking your permission to enter into with them, will help us negotiate the U.S. Fish and Wildlife permitting process and also provide us permit support solutions once we have the permit to make sure that we have the procedures and policies in place to stay compliant with the permit. So for pre-listing permit development, and let me say this is a for U.S. Fish and Wildlife, this is the equivalent process to a Corps of Engineers 404 permitting process. So it's a very intensive and large process. It's not just filling out a sheet of paper that says we're going to build a pipeline and we're going to be clearing trees. So it's a very involved process. And I'll go through all the things that we are going to accomplish with this contract in a minute. But the duration is anticipated to be from FY 2019 through 2020. Budget is very conservatively estimated at $950,000. However, the key with the pre-listing permit is we have to get it finalized before the listing decision is effective, which we anticipate to be in late 2019. They're going to propose their recommendation late 2018, and then there's about a year of federal postings, public comments, procedures like that that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife has to go through before it's effective. So anticipated contract tasks, this first slide are all tasks that we need to do to get to the developing of the permit. So not only do we have to coordinate with U.S. Fish and Wildlife to scope the permit, which determines the area, the term of the permit, Fish and Wildlife offers a variety of terms from 5 to 30 years, each with different levels of increasing intensity. They have asked in preliminary discussions for some future drought condition scenarios, which essentially defining a drought worse than the drought of record and then predicting over the permit term what's the likelihood of such a drought occurring. We'll do some more environmental flow standard analysis based off the work we're doing under our CISOPS long-term agreements. Develop a habitat quantification tool. That's a real pretty little term for a heck load of work. That's essentially going through and evaluating the wetted, perennially redded stream banks throughout the basin for quality of potential habitat. And it's not just as habitat present or absence, but you have to actually rate it excellent, good, poor, or no habitat. So that's a pretty significant undertaking in and of itself. And then we will need some additional field work from the BioWest team to help fill in gaps and better solidify our position in the permit negotiations.
And this is beginning to collect that science to support whatever decision or set of actions is going forward.
No. Then we'll move into the permit, and these are all the components of the permit that we will have to do. We have already had some preliminary discussions on conservation actions with U.S. Fish and Wildlife and presented a list of actions that we think we can reasonably commit to. They have been very receptive to that. They asked for a few different very minor tasks and the addition of the drought, but so far their comments, they've been very receptive and have offered very little requests for additional work. Hopefully that will maintain going through the negotiations. Also in this contract, we have included the things to help us be compliant with the permit going forward. So doing an operations and business plan, which would include evaluating the overall cost of permit compliance over the term of the permit, helping us estimate the staffing needs necessary to comply with it if any new staffing is needed, and do a cost-benefit analysis on comparing whether it's good to staff up, do these things in-house, contract the services out, or some combination thereof, depending on what's in the final permit. Also, as we go through, we know we'll need standard operating procedures, study plans. We'll have to get a scientific collection permit if we're doing work in-house. So they're going to help us through all those procedures. I do not think our existing Texas Parks and Wildlife scientific collection permit will be need amending, but if it does, they will also assist us with that process and then provide any necessary training for BRA staff on reporting, field collection work. We do have some staff with some muscle experience, but it is certainly not on the level that the BioWest team of scientists has under their belt. And finally, under the National Environmental Policy Act, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services indicated this permit at a pre-listing state will require an environmental assessment. That is essentially an assessment that all federal agencies are required to do when taking actions that assesses not only the environmental impacts of the permit, but the social and economic impacts also. And while this is usually undertaken in U.S. Fish and Wildlife right now is indicating that they will do this work in-house, we also know, just like Brad discussed, that oftentimes to move quickly, staffing is an issue, and we may have to provide them quite a bit of support on providing baseline data, information about the basin and everything else to help the development of that to get this done in a timely manner. So that is also contemplated in that contract cost. While U.S. Fish and Wildlife has indicated that they see no problem in moving forward and completing a permit prior to the final effective date of their listing decision, in the event that that does not happen and we have to move to a post-listing permit, which is a much larger and more expensive task, none of the tasks we are doing under the pre-listing permit will be lost. All that data we would have to do if we went with this option too. So we can roll that in, and by pursuing this, hopefully really reduce, there will be added expense if we have to go this route, but should hopefully reduce the overall expense because we will have already done a lot of the tasks we would have to do under this option. The contract that we are working on negotiating with the BioWest contemplates that there may be that need for a long-term relationship because right now we don't know what's in the permit. We don't know exactly what we'll be required to do. So it does make provisions for a long-term relationship and includes a negotiated rate strategy by position type. However, no additional work is authorized beyond the pre-listing permit, and if we need to authorize additional work, we will get a solid cost estimate based on a good data and a good knowledge of what we need to do, and then we will come back to the board and request a contract amendment and get your permission before we move forward with any additional actions. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Tiffany, are we supporting the total cost of this study, the $950,000, or are there other participants in this study contributing toward it?
That we are totally supporting the cost of this study. This is directly related to BRA operations. Our customers have indicated that they expect and anticipate us to deal with this problem. There might be a potential going down the road in the future. There are certificates of inclusion that we might could issue that we have not discussed at this time what we might do or require as far as a cost share for those if one of our customer cities 2 years down the road has a project that would need a similar permit and they're willing to comply with the terms and conditions of our permit, that we can include them into our permit. They operate and report to us, and then they don't have to go through this process. So there may be some potential for cost recovery there, but right now we are, because this is solely trying to protect BRA operations, we are the sole bearer of this cost.
Are other river authorities having to deal with the same issues?
Yes, there are five other river authorities. At this time, we did try to work together to see if we could come to a agreement on a path forward and share the cost. It would be, of course, a much larger cost because then you'd be covering much larger area. But we were not able to all come to a consensus on the best way to proceed. We feel it's best to get out ahead of this issue and get ourselves the certainty we need going forward. We may be at a better spot, I think, than some of the other river authorities in addressing this issue because of the size of our basin. And we do have multiple flows and flexibility coming from different areas. And the way we do our water supply operations that some of the other authorities don't necessarily have the benefit of. Because we do flow water downstream to Gulf Coast Water Authority and Dow, we're already through our operations in dry times, keeping those areas where those mussels are inundated. Director Lattimore?
If I've got two different questions, I guess, that are somewhat related. We spend the money and do all the work to get the permit, and then for some reason the Fish and Wildlife Service decides not to certify or not to list these little animals. What happens then?
We would still be committed to doing those conservation actions. That does not mean, I think it's highly unlikely the decision will not be to list, but also it does not mean that the issue can't come back around in the future. And by actively doing conservation strategies, that still provides us a level of protection moving forward in the future against a future listing decision.
If we approve this and we launch into this effort, does it in any way encourage the Fish and Wildlife Service to go forward with listing?
I don't know that it necessarily encourages them. There was initially hope that if all the river authorities could come together, we might be able to avoid a listing. However, with discussions with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, I really think that was a false hope. I think they're very motivated to get some agreements in place, but I don't know that we're necessarily going to avoid or cause a listing either way. I think they're going to move through their federal process and make their determinations regardless of what any of the river authorities in Texas choose to do. Yes, sir.
Like what we're talking about doing?
They have done some limited work. An effort funded by the Texas Comptroller's Office has actually done a tremendous amount of work to inform that listing decision. The Endangered Species Act uses a term best available science. So they are not inherently compelled to go forth and generate better science. They just have to use what's out there in the world.
Would this study either prove that they need the listing or prove that it didn't need to be listed as an endangered species?
I will say, looking at the data and in the parameters that they use to make that decision, those first two species under the Endangered Species Act as it's written today and what they have to look at, it's a warranted listing. I have some personal philosophical disagreements with the ESA, but that is the way it is.
If I can, first of all, I want to thank you, and your presentation was very professional. I have experience with this with the salamanders, and I think if you're not familiar with this act and how it works, the people that are exercising it have been accused of pushing a different agenda other than just preservation of an endangered species. So under the guise of looking out for the mussels, there could be more at stake here. The law is heavily biased in their favor. And they don't have to have much science. They have to just, somebody has to make a complaint, then we're on the clock a complaint with little background, then we're on the clock that we can never get them enough science soon enough to avoid a listing. And they know this. And so it's not necessarily them trying to accomplish their goal of what they have been accused of at times, of preserving the mussels. It is kind of a larger goal. And I completely agree with the path that we are taking. Like I said, it's something that I've had experience with in Williamson County as far as the mussel or the salamanders go. The EPA and the folks that exercise this are very practiced at what they do.
Yes,
I was. I really liked your map, and I just kind of wanted to. The downside here is it limits your minimum flow, right? So the mussels that cause us the most trouble are the ones located furthest upstream.
I didn't go back far enough.
Theoretically,
this little patch.
Yeah, that's your trouble spot.
Gives me the most concern and most heartburn, to be honest with you.
Because down here at the mouth, you're going to have plenty of flow. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's the fawn's foot that's way up there, right. Those little yellow ones, that could, you know, potentially cause you to have a higher minimum flow than you'd like to have.
That would certainly be, hopefully that's what we're hoping to avoid in this permit. And so far, Fish and Wildlife has not requested or even discussed requesting a minimum flow. That is certainly a potential that you could get there. And I think if we did not go down this path and seek a federal permit, that would probably be the outcome. It would probably be at the end of a result of a long fought, probably ugly and very expensive legal battle. Things that have happened in other states, California has had one over Delta smelt, which is an aquatic fish that lives in the bay and estuary areas, that over time they have fought and spent tens of millions of dollars for a couple of water supply organizations. They're equivalent to a river authority. They call them something different. And the end result was they did lose 800,000 acre feet of their water supply. For us, that's about 8% of their water supply for those two organizations. If we were to similarly face such a fate through the court systems, that amount about 55,000 acre feet and about $4 million of annual revenue. In California, the replacement cost to replace that lost water supply and avoid the endangered species issues are estimated to be about a $16 billion project. So we are really hoping to avoid that nasty long legal process. And there are a lot of organizations out there that are on the side of the species that are all too happy to drag you into. And as Director Bowles said, they often win. The law is definitely on the side of the species on this, and it is a very strong and often upheld law. Yes, sir.
One really quick question. We already have to provide some environmental flows. Mm-hmm. Anyway, would we be able to take credit for those flows?
That is one thing we're hoping to do. That's one thing that Fish and Wildlife has asked us to do, is evaluate the environmental flow standards and try to help them make a determination if those meeting those flows is adequate to protect the mussels. So that is encompassed in this work.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Have we done an evaluation of total expected cost, impact to the BRA from the mussels? Permitting, also lost revenue.
We're hoping to avoid lost revenue. The really,
this doesn't show where they're.
It's really a difficult task to do because we don't know what we'll be required to do in the permit.
I don't know the reservoirs.
Worst case scenario numbers I have worked up over the next 10 years would be probably roughly. And this is a wag because I don't know what's in the permit, but about a $2 million over 10-year compliance cost based off talking to other groups that have similar aquatic permits.
Okay.
But hopefully that $2 million will be offset by us not losing water supply.
Offset by what we already own?
Well, yeah, essentially, but it's protecting what we already own so we don't lose what we already own.
Yeah, okay. So by $2 million over 10 years. So
that is my.
And how good do we feel? Have we like studied it? Is that what we would feel confident? We're saying that never publicly right now. But if our customers come to us and say, we want to fight this in a different way because we're worried it's going to have an impact on rates, I mean, we can tell them $2 million over 10 years is not going to have a significant impact on rates. But if it's.
With the discussions we've had with Fish and Wildlife right now, barring significant legal challenges or a complete change in the discussions that we've had with them, I think $2 million is a reasonably safe estimate. Yes.
Now, you're asking us to pick a contractor now for this contract, mm-hmm. BioWest. Who else did we look at?
We did a request for proposal. We received 4 proposals in, SWCA, Blanton and Associates, and Natural Resource Specialist Services.
I'm looking at the
cost. Did I miss it? Were the costs comparable, or we just went on value, or how are we doing?
You would think there'd be a map.
These are picked on quality and experience of the firm. This is not a bid contract item.
The the other river authorities that are not proceeding? What is their reasoning? Just generally, I mean, you can paraphrase what they...
Yeah.
Well,
good question.
Well, I probably can't get specific with what each of them are doing. What I can tell you is in our discussions on trying to pursue a statewide strategy, where we ended up is nobody really agrees on how they want to pursue this. There are going to be other river authorities that pursue a similar path to this. There are going to be others, and I won't get into names, who just decide to fight it, who are just going to sit back and say, no, we're not going to do it. We wish them the best of luck with that strategy, but with everything that we know about the Act, I'm not sure it's going to be very successful. And the decision point that we came to is, were this thing to go south and we weren't to try to do anything to get out ahead of it, we couldn't look at our customers when they look at us and say, well, when you knew about this, what did you do? And what we don't want to say is, well, we just decided that if it goes really bad, we'll just try to fight it, because I just don't think that's a smart strategy. Some of the river authorities are going to go that route. Just based, again, on everything we know about the Act, I don't think they're going to be successful.
And Director Lloyd, to expand on your question, you know, one of the other costs that I continually discuss with customers when we talk about this is not necessarily the cost of doing the proposal that Tiffany's putting in front of you, but of the 700, let's just generalize, of the 700,000 acre feet of water that we have, all of it's under contract. So if we lost 50, 60, 70, or some amount of water, that water has to be replaced. And the replacement cost of that water scares me more than the O&M of this going forward. But granted, the O&M is a significant cost also. So there's really two costs there that bother me going forward.
We're allocating 1 million dollars right now through fiscal year 2020. And we're saying the total cost is only going to be double that. So we're going to spend another $1 million of the 8 years following.
That is my best estimate right now based off the discussions we have had with Fish and Wildlife on potential conservation measures.
What conservation measures are you talking about?
We have committed to water quality monitoring in the areas of the mussels, extending some of the in-stream flow style surveys that we're doing as agreements with Parks and Wildlife under SysOps into the areas where the mussels are known to be, because our system operation sites were not picked with any thought of mussels available. We have discussed doing environmental standards compliance reporting to them. Are we hitting those Texas environmental flow standards? We have talked about doing some long-term monitoring of existing known mussel beds on a rotating basis.
Mostly monitoring, it's not, because one of the things that I saw and I just read a tiny bit about sediment and that you were losing habitat for them because of where the sediment is going, and it's like, I don't know how you can fix that. I mean, it goes where it goes when the river is up high. And so I just wondered what, besides monitoring.
Yeah, that would be, if U.S. Fish and Wildlife started to go down that path, that might be a comeback to the board and have a larger discussion, because you're right. Trying to solve that in the Brazos with the historically poor land management practices at large stretches of the basin would be a significant undertaking. I have had some initial thoughts and discussions with the Nature Conservancy and the Texas Land Conservancy. I'm trying to think of exactly what they're... There's
but
another
you would person. Be working hard to keep that kind of stuff out
right.
of your permit.
That is what we're
if trying. Monitoring is what you're doing, then that's a big difference than if you actually have to do conservation measures.
And using one of the things they looked at and we've discussed is that habitat quantification tool. If we've identified areas that should support mussels but maybe don't have them now, then doing maybe for Allen's Creek, we fortunately do not have any of these mussels in Allen's Creek. We've surveyed it, but we do have some other mussels that are not species of concern. But maybe we could do some initial transplant studies and move some of those, which we'll have to move for Allen's Creek anyway, to those areas of habitat just to see if those areas would actually support mussels. So it's...
It's tough.
Now, I will say Fish and Wildlife is not declared, but I don't get the impression that they are looking at captive propagation in release as an option for the long-term survivability of the mussels. And if they did, that would be one of their tests anyway. That would be well beyond what we as BRA could do or that they could allow us to do. But just to see, are there areas elsewhere in the basin that could support these mussels if they ever want to go down that path and help identify it? So far, it's mainly monitoring and reporting of on conditions that they are concerned about for these mussels.
Go ahead.
The other river authorities that address this, have they done that at the board level or just at the staff level? And have you seen them act as board or on this? Is everything you're telling me based on staff discussion?
I'm not aware of any board action by any of the other river authorities at this point.
I just want to.
You know, we're moving forward right now, considering doing this.
Yes, sir.
At a board level, or at least at a CEO level.
Yes.
Yes, they did.
We were over here trying to put two maps together, but I'd like to confirm that those top three yellow dots are lie between Granbury and Possum Kingdom.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, obviously, this whole thing was put up by the Granbury people then, because that would force us to have environmental flows into Granbury. So it's obvious I put it together now.
Yes, sir.
I think that kind of ties in with what I was worried about earlier. If this has that impact on our stakeholders, we need to keep them in it. And I'm sure we're doing that. I just want to say, if you're doing it and you are, then good job.
Well,
please continue. Well, if it's going to impact anybody we deal with, just worry about the flow.
Anytime we have anything that threatens our water supply, like this mussel issue or the proposed core rules, we make sure that our customers are involved, because we need those guys writing letters also. We need them involved.
Yeah.
So, well noted, Director Lloyd.
And it's not a matter of if it affects our rate. It's just, is it going to dramatically affect our rate?
Is anybody going to notice it in complaint?
And I think we're taking the right measures to keep that as small as we can. This is a heavy-handed law. I mean, we're on the clock right now. And, if we don't come to an agreement, we wait for their ruling. I mean, we're at their mercy, and that becomes a much tougher, and the science just won't get there in time. So
the river authorities that are taking the course of action of, we're not going to do anything and we're going to fight it, they're making a huge mistake. I don't have any experience with mussels other than the saltwater ones really taste good. But I do have some experience with birds that are endangered, and there is real teeth in that law, and they will, and certain cities will get behind those laws, and it can be, there isn't any negotiation. This is what it is. I'm sorry that you own a piece of property that has that bird on it, but you can't do anything with it. And you get Wes and lawyers involved, and they finally figured out a way to donate it as a park or something, because you're not going to do anything with it. And this has got real teeth. And ignoring it is not the right path of action at all.
Yes. It does, and I've kind of been it for over a decade representing clients in this area, but the law can change. And so we've been to D.C. and we've talked to them, and the consensus is we need to do this, is what I'm – what you're not saying is we think we're going to fix something outside of this process, right?
Okay. Hey, David. So this presentation was made at the customer meeting last month or earlier this month. So any feedback from the customers?
We've had zero negative feedback at all. Negative feedback as in the sense of BRA getting out ahead and spending money. Yeah.
Yes,
sir. I don't want to extend the discussion, but what the other director had said here, I think besides the customers, that there are other stakeholders in this basin that need to be aware of the fight and the potential downsides of what we're doing. And it ties right in with what I know the staff has been doing to communicate to property owners and the surrounding, the political entities that are involved. So I think that communication is very important as well.
Any more questions? You have a resolution?
Yes, sir. Be it resolved by the Board of Directors of the Brazos River Authority hereby authorizes the General Manager, CEO, to enter into a contract with BioWest Inc. in an amount not to exceed $950,000 for endangered species permitting for freshwater mussels, developing all necessary associated documents, and assisting the Brazos River Authority with implementation of permit provisions.
You've heard the resolution. Motion to adopt.
So moved.
Chris, second. Who's second? Lori. Please poll the board.
Presiding Officer Scott?
Yes.
Director Bell?
Yes.
Director Zaccanino?
Yes.
Director Adams?
Yes.
Director Bennis?
Yes.
Director Bowles?
Yes.
Director Christian?
Yes.
Director Flores?
Yes.
Director Huber?
Yes.
Director Johnson?
Yes.
Director Lattimore?
Yes.
Director Lloyd?
Yes.
Director Munson?
Yes.
Director Rankin?
Yes.
Director Smith?
Yes.
Director Tallis?
Yes.
Director Taylor?
Yes.
All right, we're going to take about a 10-minute break.